Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book. I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast for everyone to download and listen to. Joining me today, like always, is Juliana.
Hello everyone.
And the last episode that we recorded was about 5 to 6 weeks ago. It was the end of July, or the 20th of July, it says here. We talked about Solaris by Stanislav Lem. Since then, we've been on various adventures. The whole summer has happened. We went off to the European Juggling Convention, which took up a lot of time and space. Juliana caught COVID for the third year in a row at the EJC. Turns out going to big festivals, they're all super spreader events. There's just no way around it.
And I'm the only person Let me finish. Right. I'm the only person in my vicinity that still carries around COVID tests. Other people catch it, they won't know because they don't test. But I tested and I know now, by now I know how it feels.
Right,
and
so you're not the only person getting COVID. No. You're the only person testing positive for COVID because you've got this big bag of COVID tests that we've got left over. Yeah. All right, and then after that, I went on a work trip. Juliana was working and then also recovering from COVID for an extra few times. But we finally got the time and the energy and are feeling good about this and to do a podcast. So thanks to everyone for being patient with us over the summer for not bugging us about. I don't think we've got enough listeners who care about us enough, but it's right there in the title, right there in the intro. There's no set schedule. It's just whenever I finish a book.
And I hope that everybody had some really fun summer holiday relaxation days. Yeah. Maybe you read a book that you think you would put on your own must read.
Well, let's get to that list as well. So the previous episode was actually at the end of June. So we've managed to do one podcast a month for July and August. Maybe we'll record another one. Actually, no, we can't record another one in August because it's already the end of August. But we'll get to some more. So I'm like 4 books behind. Should we have a look through some of these ones? So I read The City of Last Chances, which is the Tyrant Philosopher's novel by Adrian Tchaikovsky, a fantasy novel.
Okay.
Inversions, which is the Ian M. Banks culture series that I gave 5 stars to and is on the SFBRP must reads list. Reread that to see if it will remain on the SFBRP must reads list.
Yep.
Spoilers. Yes, it's very good. Even on like the 4th read through that I've done, I'm like, there's so much stuff in here. It's really great. Which is like another fantasy book set in the label that went on there on the must reads list, which is fantasy. It's either fantasy from one point of view or science fiction from a different point of view in the book. Then I read A Time of Changes, which is by Robert Silverberg, which has been on my to-read list for ages and ages because it won the Nebula Award back in like 1960s. Oh, I don't know. It's a maybe 1970s.
Never heard of that book?
Yeah. Well, I'd never read it before. And then I started reading it and I was like, I've read this before.
Oh, no.
But again, it's one of those things that I was like, oh, I do. I remember this scene. But it's, anyway, we'll get onto that. I'll do an episode about that. And then also you read The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet. And I also read this book. I started a reread of it again to see because we have this project, which is the SFBRP must reads list, with the idea being that, hey, this is our, it's not a, I don't want to say it's a canon. It's not even a must reads list. It's more of, we just couldn't come up with a better title for it except must reads.
Maybe like a recommendation.
Yeah, recommendations. I wouldn't say you must read any of these books, but again, if you want to get a good understanding of where science fiction it has been over the past, but also they have to be good books. They can't just be like, this is historically interesting. It has to actually be a good read. It has to hold up even after, even after, in some cases, 130 years, like Time Machine or The War of the Worlds or whatever like that. So, holding up over time and still being a good read and still being enjoyable and just good, well written and all that kind of stuff
does make
a big difference. If it's not as well read and it doesn't hold up after so much in terms of writing or storytelling, then it has to be like really like really important book. You know, that's why, even though I don't think Starship Troopers is a book which holds up fantastically in terms of story or characters or these other kind of things, it's so influential, and the politics there are so interesting that it's like undergird so much science fiction that I'm like, all right, is this foundational? So yes, it can be bumped up if something is foundational in
yes.
that way.
And also what I think is separates us this list of from other science fiction. And Luke just dumped his arm against his
microphone. I hurt my hand on my last gig and I've got this broken, it's not a broken finger, I've sprained my finger, and then just being careful about something, I move my hand and just...
And he didn't want to see a doctor about it. Now
it's
he needs
fine.
To
it's
suffer.
Fine. It's fine.
Anyway,
what
I...
Punch my microphone.
Get yourself together here. Anyway,
I didn't even mean to talk.
What I wanted to say here, actually, is that unlike other anthologies that like just list for, as you said, importance or relevance or whatever, I think what this list is stands out, makes it stand out a little bit, is that it also covers different sections, or like, I wouldn't really say subgenres, but like topical, like the it's not just okay, we go for hard science fiction, spaceship in space, but all the different aspects.
Yeah, there's like more mythic stuff in there, like verging
and
into
nicely sorted,
religious stuff and
nicely
fantasy
sorted
stuff
under these headlines. And I think that makes it really accessible, and you could get a really great overview of what is there in science fiction, because that is sometimes when people want to start reading a certain genre, you get overwhelmed so much in what direction you can go and what is out there. That I think this is a really nice way of accessing the different topics in the genre.
So let's get on to today's episode, which people already know what it is because we've already already mentioned it. It's a Long Way to a Small Angry Planet.
Yes.
By Becky Chambers. Now, this is down on the bottom of the list. We've reviewed, this says down here at the bottom of the list, we've reviewed most of these books recently enough or have read them enough times to be sure of their place on the SFBIP must read list. However, we plan on rereading various other novels to see if they should be added to the list in the future. Mm-hmm. And we got Finity's End, we got Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Under the Skin, 2001: A Space Odyssey. Some of these have like been books and movies and things like that.
Yes.
And then there's some others which they're below are some books that were once under consideration, but after a reread, do they get added or not? Two of them did. Speaker for the Dead by Orson Scott Card and Nevernish by David Zindel got added. Roadside Picnic is still in this limbo. It's going to take a reread, maybe another reread, to decide if Roadside Picnic gets added to the
list. I'm still reading it from time to time. It's not a book that I happily go to enjoy, like have some good time reading.
Yeah. Two other books, The Forever War and Gateway, which I'll sort of always consider, oh, these are great works of science fiction. You reread them now and you're like, well, that's not very good. That's a bit shit. Mm-hmm. And then The Hunger Games, which I was like, this is very, very influential in young adult science fiction and dystopian science fiction and young people rising up against the totalitarian state, and it span off movies, and those movies span off other imitators. And then I started rereading it and I was like, oh no, this isn't that great. Even though when the first time I read it I enjoyed it, now I'm like, oh, this is kind of redundant. So
although I think that must come with an asterisk, because because you are now what, like 15 years older?
Here's the thing.
You're so far out of the target group or the...
It doesn't matter. I don't mind being outside the target group. If it's well written enough, I'll be like, yeah, that's great. You know,
okay.
There's no I don't have any issue with a book which might be... But also, this is the SFBRP must reads list. This isn't Luke tries to please every, you know, 14-year-old girl who read a book and it meant a lot to them. That's not what this list is. This is the SFBRP must reads list. So it's books that stand up over time that I like. Anyway, let's get on to this. Where will this book fall? A Long Way to a Small Angry Planet, because I wrote it here. Will this still be relevant more than 10 years later? ? That is the question that I have to answer here.
Mm-hmm.
Does it make the SFBRP must reads list? How should we approach talking about this book?
I don't know. You didn't finish it in the second way.
I know I didn't finish it.
Second read through.
Let me tell you why I didn't finish it. Kizzy, the character of Kizzy, was so annoying that I couldn't get through things that she was saying. Like, when I got to her part, I was like, this person, this character in the book, who's meant to be, like, quirky and enjoyable to be around or appealing or whatever, like, is a main character in the book. There's entire, like, sections where she starts talking. And it got to about, like, 40% of the way through, and she's in a bad mood, so she's moaning and complaining. And I started reading it, and I was like, oh, I can't carry on. This character is so bad. And then I looked at this previous review that I did. Neil rated this book 1 star. He says, I just finished listening to the review of your book. So obviously I mentioned this in the previous episode that we recorded back in 2016 or wherever it was. April 2016. Spot on commentary. Also, I'm so glad I wasn't the only one who found Kizzy too obnoxious to the point, or so obnoxious to the point of me skipping ahead each time she starts talking. So I remember now, Neil has reminded me from when he posted this in 2017 or whatever. Mm-hmm. He reminded me that when I read this book 9 years ago, Kizzy was so annoying to me that when I got to that part, when I got to anything that she said, I was just skipping to the end of what she said.
Okay.
And then carrying on with the book. However, this isn't the reason. This was the immediate reason why I stopped reading it this time.
Okay.
But that can't be the only reason, because remember a few episodes ago or earlier this year, I listened to the audiobook of Lord of the Rings. And Andy Serkis was so bad at singing. So bad at singing that I was doing the same thing. He started singing and I was skipping forwards.
Yeah.
I was skipping forwards in the book.
Yeah.
And then going and then looking up the poem that Tolkien had written and just reading it. Or if it was long, looking at the YouTube video for somebody else who can actually sing, singing it and listening to actually a good singer singing, I don't know, whoever, Galadriel's song rather than Andy Serkis singing it.
Yes.
However, in that case, that only knocked Lord of the Rings, like something that was so bad and so annoying, and me having to skip forward to get through it, only knocked off half a star of my enjoyment, just because it was annoying to read a book when I had to constantly skip forward because it was too bad to listen to.
Yeah.
In this case, there was enough other things wrong with the book that I wasn't enjoying that this was sort of like just, you know, we were talking about bottlenecks and straws. In this case, it was the straw that broke the camel's back was me having to read any dialogue involving Kizzy.
Okay.
But there was many other things about it, which I remember enjoying this book okay-ish the first time. I haven't gone back and listened to the episode that we recorded in 2016.
Yeah.
But this time through, I was looking at it and I was like, oh, this isn't very good. And I putting my finger to highlight something and make a note. And I realized, oh, there's already a note here. Luke from 9 years ago made a note about this.
Yes.
That it didn't make sense or something wasn't working storytelling-wise or something wasn't working writing-wise or something wasn't working in terms of, I don't know, just science fiction-y kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, just world-building or just the writing of it or whatever. And me now is going to make a note and I realize, oh, I'm making a note, like this Kindle note is still there from 9 years later. But not just that it's still there from 9 years later, but 9 years ago, I was interested to see what the book was about. I was interested to see where it led. I was interested to see who were the characters we're going to meet along the way. What is going to be the outcome of this? All that kind of stuff. And I realized, oh, I remember all of the stuff that happened, not all of the stuff, I remember most of the stuff that happened in this book. I remember the twists, I remember the reveal, I remember that Rosemary, her father is going to be like a weapons dealer, I remember that this person's going to get a body, all these different kind of things that are like set up at the start of the book.
Yeah.
I kind of remembered what was going to happen, who they were going to meet along the way. There was going to be some pirates, there was going to be some, you know, everywhere that they went, they were going to find friends, and this person is there, and they're friends with this, and then they got there. You know, I remembered all of that, and I was like, oh, the only thing that drew me through to the end of the book the first time was just curiosity about what was going to happen in the book. Yes. And on my second read through, I remember, oh, nothing really happens. I mean, things happen in the book, but there's nothing actually, I don't remember anything appealing in this book. So in this case, yeah, it was like the book is good enough for me to be curious enough about it 9 years ago for me to read through to the end and be like, oh, that was all right, I guess.
Okay.
But on the second read through, it just didn't hold up to me. And Kizzy was, again, straw that broke the camel's back, a bit from Kizzy.
Okay.
So there you go. That's my little bit about why I stopped reading it.
Okay.
So
could you, because the monitor is quite far away from me, could you read what Jenny wrote on your review? Did she comment on
Jenny
review?
From Reading Over. Yeah. Oh, no, it's nothing about this book. She says the second book is supposed to be the story of Love is New Life.
Right.
And I'll be interested to see how many of this huge cast of characters makes a showing.
Yeah.
Spoiler. None.
Yeah. No.
Only Lovey goes on to become...
It's completely different direction.
Again, I didn't get to the end of that second book on the first read through. And the third book, what is it? Record of a Spaceborne Through. But I managed to get like two chapters in and didn't manage to get through that either.
Right.
So yeah, there is just a mismatch of what I'm wanting from science fiction, or even wanting from fiction, or even wanting from a book, or wanting from any kind of reading experience.
Yeah.
Which is not only is none of those things in this book, the things that I'm wanting out of any kind of reading of science fiction or just enjoyment or any thinking or anything like that.
Yeah.
But what is here isn't good enough to even be a good example of something that I'm not interested in.
Yeah, I get it.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, even when I was like reading, what was that? What was a recent book that I read? Oh yeah, Ministry of Time by Callie Ann Bradley. I'm not really interested in romance for the sake of romance, but there was some good romance in this, and I'm like, yeah, I'm enjoying this romance. You know, this is a good. That book failed in other ways, but it did enough. It was well written enough and good enough at what it was doing to get me through all the way to the end. And I'm like, yeah, 3 stars, whatever, like that. You know?
Yeah.
Whereas this book, even what it was trying to do, even the effects that it was trying to have on me wasn't working, especially if the effect that it's trying to have is like, oh, it's wanting to be cozy. It's wanting to be about, you know, having fun, hanging out with all the people on the ship. It's about, you know, like what you want from a science fiction-y, Firefly, Star Trek-y kind of thing, where you're like, you make friends with the characters. You know, someone will come in, it'll be a new character. It's about them making friends with the people along the way.
Yes.
And spending time with them. For me, it even fails at the thing it's trying to be, it's trying to do.
Okay.
Yeah. So there you go. That's what I was wanting to say.
Yes. Now, you see... this is your podcast.
Yeah.
And for me to have any sort of as strong and well said, well put response or even opinion to what you have, I will always fail. I cannot make any stronger arguments or statements about a book that I read again, and just by the speed and the way that I pick up a book shows something for me how much I enjoy opening it up and actually reading it. And so whatever I'm gonna say, it is already clear that this book won't go on that list. And I'm fine with it, but...
Wait a second.
Yes.
There is another book. One of the only books on this whole list here, episode list, which has a 5-star rating. Let's look at it. We've got Use of Weapons. We've got The Prestige, The Martian, Player of Game, all of these different ones. Now, look down here. There is one book listed here. Literally...
I cannot see that. It's just so tiny and I can't see it.
Back in 2022, we read a book... Also by Becky Chambers.
Yes.
Also called A Psalm for the Wild Built. It's Monk and Robot number 1.
Yes.
That book is like a novella.
Yes.
I struggled to get through it.
Yes.
You gave it 5 stars. And look here, it's listed as a 5-star book along with like these other great books, if you know what I mean. Like there's literally, how many is that? There's like 20 books in total in 18 years of doing this podcast, 20 books in total have a 5-star rating.
Yes.
One of them, I almost didn't get to the end of it, and it was a novella. But you liked it so much that you gave it 5 stars.
Yes.
And so here it is. It's listed here as a 5-star book, even though I think it's probably a 2-star book.
And you can think that. And I'm fine.
My point is, you're saying that this book isn't making it on the SFBRP must reads list because I didn't think it was very good and didn't get to the end of it, but you really liked it and loved it and it affected you in whatever way. I'm talking now about The Psalm for the Wild Built.
Yes.
What I'm saying is you say it won't get onto the SFBRP must reads list. I'm saying there's a chance it will still make it onto the SFBRP must reads list. And that's why I was setting this up at the start of this episode, saying that if it's important in other ways, even if it has not a 4 or 5 star rating, it can still make it onto the list if it holds up over time and if it still does the job and if it's influential enough, it can still make it onto there. In the same way that this book has an average of 5 stars when this normally we average out our ratings of a book, don't we? And in this case, I let one go through. So there you go.
It's a pity that you didn't let me finish because you intersected by me making the point that I couldn't have the arguments to put it on there.
Yeah.
However, I wasn't finished yet.
All right. Oh, okay. Go for it.
Because as much as I did enjoy reading the book, it does have some really strong, big things that just didn't make any sense reading it the second time.
Oh, so you're not going to talk me into putting this on the SFDRP
no, and I wouldn't
list.
Have.
Oh, I just set that up. I wanted you I wanted you to give the big defense of this book. Oh, I thought that's what this episode was going to be about. It was me off with that, saying I didn't get to the end of it. But I wanted you to launch into, no, this should make it onto the SFDRP must reads list because of these reasons.
I think... you didn't. No, the thing is, you didn't want to talk. You said, "Let's just go into the podcast and let's see what
it was going to be." I didn't know what you thought this podcast was going to be, and I didn't know what I didn't know what I thought this podcast was going to be. So I'm glad I did interrupt you there because now I literally opened it up to give you a chance to get this book on the SFBRP must reads list, and you're saying that you don't want it to be on there.
Okay. After I have said that, however, I do think there should be there is books that go below it where we said, oh, this doesn't go on the list because it has...
Yeah, it's just a consideration, a long list. Yeah.
Yes, I still want it to appear because I still think it is an important... For me, it is and was an important, hey, let me start reading something where I do appreciate many of the things that are happening.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? So I don't want to... have it disappear in the ether
it'll be down here on this where is it on this this extra section, like, it'll be down here in the notes at the bottom,
appendices
on the appendices, saying these are either under consideration or were under consideration for this list.
So this is where I want this book to be and stay,
right? Okay. Yeah,
because I do think there's many things in this book that I really appreciate and enjoy, but there's also some points where I read it through now and thought, like, why do we put all the things in? Why do they have to have pirates and then politics and then...
A war.
Yes. Too many things. And it's like, okay, if we would have just concentrated on, okay, they just need to punch this hole through space here and they encounter this species there that they are a little bit not so open and happy. That would have been plenty enough to focus on. But no, we also had to have an energy weapon that then destroys the AI that runs the ship, that somebody has found a kind of like a love interest relationship.
And then
they work on this. And it's just too many things again. Yeah. Like, however, if I kind of put that aside, I do really appreciate the creativity about, for example, the alien species that we encounter and the description and the world building, the thing. And also, of course, then coming to a group of people that have formed their family away from home.
Right.
Because they have to.
Yeah,
they
the found are, family kind the of
The found
stuff.
Family. And they accept each other and they support each other in other ways. And I think that is admirable and enjoyable to read, especially in harsh outside conditions. Like, stuff is happening on the outside, but then you can rely on...
Yeah, but I just found it was hard, stuff was happening on the outside, but they just turn up to a space station and the guy's girlfriend is there. And I'm like, they just turn up and she's there and then they can have sex. And then you're like, oh, and then you can... And I always thought the stuff that was happening on the outside didn't have an impact on what was going on side. There was like this little circle of friends on the inside of the ship who all kind of got on except for the one guy who was like one grumpy
guy. The algae guy.
What?
The algae guy.
Yeah, the algae guy is sort of like, well, he's the guy who we don't get on with, but everyone else gets on fine. And I'm like, but the best things, the reason why we actually like Firefly, even though there's only 14 episodes in a movie, is because when they start off, we don't trust the other people. People are thrown together and some people are, you know, some people are passengers and some people are crew and somebody is like, you know, this, you know, an escort or whatever it is over there. And as it goes on, people get over their differences. Mm-hmm. And learn that this person can be trusted. Oh, we thought this guy was being suspicious, but he's trying to save his sister. And then the sister comes in and we think that she's being annoying and dangerous, but actually she's been experimented on. You know, it's sort of like, yeah, but they're difficult. Ah, but then we come to understand each other and we get together as a crew. And by the end, we're all, you know, striving together and being family.
Yeah.
And in this case, Rosemary... Is it Rosemary, the main character?
Yeah.
There's actually, I have the page here as well.
Yeah, yeah. Oh.
Where is it? Oh, it's here. So, yeah. Rosemary, Ashby, Sizzix, Jenks, Kizzy, Dr. Chef, Artis, Corbin, I guess it is, Lovelace and Ohan. We get together. Rosemary Harper turns up. She's shown this little cabin and she says, oh, it's quite small, but it was perfect for her in every way. And I was like, how is that perfect? Like... I thought she was like a rich kid. Again, maybe I'm just remembering back from my previous term that she's got like, she comes from money.
Yes.
She's like, she gets given this tiny kind of cabinet and she's like, it was a bit smaller than she had liked, but it was perfect in every way. And I'm just like, how was it perfect in every way? Tell me, what was it about it that was perfect in every way for her? Or tell me that it wasn't perfect and give me a reason why she didn't like it. But it's just said, oh, and it was perfect in every way and that's it. And I'm like, but... there's just nothing. There's just nothing there.
Yes.
There wasn't the, oh, you're a rich kid who's coming in. Ah, it's a bit small. It's a bit dirty, or it's a bit like they just arrive and immediately plugged into it. And she has sort of like, I know, is she the one who, I can't remember. She's the one I made a note about it. Sort of like, oh yeah, she's a bit shy, but also she's bad at reading other people's emotions. I'm like, why don't you say that she's autistic or whatever? I can't remember which of the characters. It's sort of like, but there's no drama there. We're just told that she's bad at reading other people's emotions and is a bit shy, but that never creates any drama. It's just an opportunity for one of the other characters to explain to another character why this person is like that.
Okay.
But we never see any outcomes of anyone, of anything, you know, anybody getting over anything with anybody else except maybe Corbin or whoever the other guy is at the end,
yes.
You know. So it feels fake, nice, stress-free, found family rather than anybody having to actually deal with what it would be like to be in a enclosed space with anybody for any amount of time. So that's why I'm saying the thing that's that is what it's trying to do is be good about showing a found family and lots of different people with different personalities and they're all getting on and stuff like that. For me, it fails at that because none of those relationships or situations felt real to me because there was never a moment where anybody was tested or had to do anything or think about anything. We were just told that they found it difficult or they found it perfect in a way. You know what I mean? That showing, that just telling, not showing kind of thing.
Okay.
So,
this is then now a way that how you read books that I read books different.
Yeah.
And for example, I have this, were you just mentioning the room? Okay. Here's a thing that happens in my brain often. I grew up, We were living in small accommodation with my mum for the first 5 years. Then we moved to a place in Berlin that was like with big apartment blocks.
Oh, right, yeah.
Very
yeah.
Eastern European kind of
concrete
things. And then we started moving into different sort of apartments with bigger windows, and high ceilings. And then since then, I've always been living in apartments with lots of big windows.
Right.
Sometimes I'm on a train going somewhere and I look in and I see different kind of buildings out there.
Right.
And then sometimes I imagine myself living in very different circumstances, like a smaller apartment with smaller windows,
right.
or like this 70s style buildings. And then I think, there's this really overwhelming feeling that I have where I'm longing for this kind of different, like, or simpler or smaller or whatever.
Yeah.
Me having to adjust to that and feeling cozy in that.
Yeah.
And I cannot really explain that. But what this writing in this book does is that it is creating, it's bringing up these feelings without having to implicitly state anything further.
Yeah.
And that is what that book does for me.
Yeah.
And this is why then I don't need particularly more explanation. I only needed to hear, okay, somebody, and in this case Kizzy, has sewn up some curtains and decorated the plain little room with some curtains. And then that revokes a certain emotion for me. Evokes.
Revokes is the opposite.
Yeah. It evokes a certain feeling for me. And then that is enough.
Yeah. I understand. The reason why this book has like loads of people giving it 5-star reviews and it's got a 4.17 rating and it works is because it is doing enough to get that out of most people or enough people.
Yeah.
What it is doing is like the whole idea. This is why it's being considered for the SFBRP must reads list, is like, what is cozy science fiction and what is the main method of people liking cozy science fiction, is that it is saying stuff which brings up existing emotions in people.
Yeah.
It's not doing, again, I'm not talking about this book in specific. I'm saying, like, if we're going to define what cozy science fiction is or what cozy fiction is doing, it is referencing things or using language which brings up existing emotions in people rather than the writing doing the work to take someone out of their current experience, put them in a different experience, even if it is reminding them of something or their past or, you know, thinking about the future or whatever it is. Like, so it doesn't, I'm not even talking, it has to be, you know, something fantastical or speculative or science fictional.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, what is it doing here to, like, make you take yourself out of your, you know, comfort zone, comfortable mm-hmm. kind mm-hmm. of stuff, and consider something from somebody else's point of view to a way that you have to actually imagine what somebody else is thinking, what somebody else is doing, or what you would think in a different situation.
Yeah.
What cozy science fiction does is use the right words, which unlocks people's emotions about what they already feel about a situation.
Absolutely.
What I'm saying is, this book obviously works well enough at what it's trying to do for other people.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work for me.
Yeah, I think we already stated that it doesn't work for you.
I get annoyed. There was something about like Kizzy was wearing a dress. Most people couldn't pull it off, but she could pull it off. And I'm like, what does that mean? Like, again, I only remember this because I was looking through, because I can see these Kindle notes as well. And so it was perfect, but why? Tell us the reason. We know the character better, but here there's nothing to learn. So we're never actually learning about Rosemary and why the room is perfect for her. We're never actually learning anything more about Kizzy and how she can wear a dress. Or whatever it is, you know, I can't remember what the expression is. Like, she could pull it. Nobody else could pull off this dress, but she could pull off this dress. And I'm like, but all you're doing is telling me that someone can pull off a dress, but you're not telling me how. What is it about her character? Is it the way that she looks? Is it the way she acts? Is it the way she thinks? Is it because the colors work really well? Like, what is it about her that can pull off this dress? There's nothing there. All we have to do is imagine our cool friend who can pull off a dress that we could never pull off. You know what I mean? When I say pull it off, like, they can just make something suit them. They're like, oh yeah, they can have a hat with a feather in it and this crazy jacket. If I wore that, I'd feel like an idiot. I'd look like an idiot. I could never do that. But I have a friend who can do it. So it's just one of those things. It's just sort of like, imagine your cool friend, this person. Imagine this feeling that you have being in this thing. And I do have, I can imagine what makes a small room comfortable enough that I find it perfect in every way and I'm happy to be in that. That's my cabin. I can imagine how someone can pull off a dress that other people can't pull off. But this the way that the writing works isn't, it's, I don't know, it's just leaving up to me to be like, all right, you imagine your friend who you like and are comfortable with, or the place that you are and the friend group that you have. Imagine that. Right, that's what this person's feeling.
Yes, and I understand your criticism here.
No, it's not criticism. I'm not trying to convince you of criticism of the book. You don't need to be defensive about this. I'm trying to explain how cozy science fiction works.
Yes.
It's not a criticism.
I understand.
I'm not criticizing the book for this.
No.
I'm just saying it's doing a different job.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think we established really well what the idea behind cozy science fiction is. And however...
Yeah.
And I want to explain now why I do think that Robert and Monk gets on this list... And there's...
No, Robert Monk isn't on the SFBRP must reads list. It did get 5 stars.
Oh, okay.
It's not on the SFBRP. It's right. It's also a novella. So even if it was really good, if it was the best ever, it would have to be like amazing to be a novella on a book mostly about novels. A list mostly about novels. Yeah.
I do think, though, if I would put a cozy science fiction book on the must read list, because I think it is a subgenre and it is a thing, I would put more Robert and Monk as a representation of the genre rather than the Long Journey to a Small Angry Planet.
Yeah.
Because the Small Angry Planet book touches on many things, but because it's conflating so many other things together,
it's not focused enough.
It's not the real deal yet. And I think with Robert and Monk, that is really where it is the thing.
Right, yes. It's much more focused in what it's trying to do.
Absolutely. There's no distraction. There's no like 5 other topics being put upon and then
five
war
other characters
and
all having their own story.
And pirates and whatever. This is what I tried to say with the different things here and why I do think there is a place for cozy science fiction and readers also like me who then don't want sometimes I don't want a book everything to explain it. I don't want because I'm okay let me put it this way and now I need you to not interrupt me here. I am a very empathetic person,
right?
My whole life is lived of being aware of what's happening in my surrounding, what's happening to people around me, how they look, how they feel, what their tone of voice sounds, how they, what kind of aura they have, or like in a room. And so that I do this all the time already in my life is a very big part of an exhaustion that I feel. Because... Literally yesterday I was in the city with my mum and it is so baffling to me how many people live their lives not constantly looking out to see where other people are, where they are walking to, what they are doing next, calculating how can I pass through this gap? Why am I standing around the corner in front of stairs that leads away from a platform?
They're just people living their lives.
Yeah, I know. And I admire that because I can't do that. So my life is constantly being empathetic and thinking how other people are perceiving something.
Yeah.
And then I really want sometimes a book where that isn't being done so much, where something is just stated and I can just... put in whatever I want, and then that's it. I don't have to put that much emotional labor into understanding other people and understanding other circumstances and understanding everything that's happening. Sometimes I want to be the ignorant person in the room, and that I can achieve that by reading books.
Yeah.
And a book like that gives me some of that space because it doesn't touch too much into detail. Yeah. It explains enough of different things that I really think, that's interesting, that's quirky, but I don't have to put in the hard emotional labor of, this person is different in that way, and then they experience it in every detail like that. That can be really, really challenging and exhausting to me. And sometimes I want a book to just wash over me, and I become the ignorant person just living their life without having to do too much work in that respect.
Yeah.
And I think this is really what describes this really well, of why I sometimes like reading these cozy science fiction books, because they take away something that I experience in my everyday life already heavily. And so that is the appeal. And I think this is also the appeal for a lot of other people, where they then don't need an extra, why is this room not perfect?
Yeah.
They are fine with just that.
Yeah.
And for them, that's all they need to know, or for them to be sufficiently explained by an author what's happening. Yes, yeah. It's probably not outstanding writing, but sometimes that's really definitely
there's a point. I think if the writing was better and if the storytelling was better, and I say better like in a kind of this objective way, you know, the whole the easiest rule to talk about this is the show don't tell. You know, there's this one highlight here as well. It says Ashby and Dr. Chef were the only ones who knew that Ohan had begun to wane. So Ohan is, you know, slowly, you know, he's getting too old. He's fading or whatever's happening as well. I guess they save him by the end of the book. I can't remember. I think they do. And I'm like, we're just told that. We're just stated they were the only ones who knew that Ohan had begun to wane. And my note was, why not show us them realizing this? That's a note that I made 9 years ago, by the way. And I'm like, yeah. That scene would be more uncomfortable. It would actually put more stuff on it to actually show Dr. Ashby and Dr. Chef realizing that their crewmate and their friend is going to die soon because he's starting to wane. So we are kind of spared the show it, and we're just told it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We don't have to experience what it's like to notice that your friend has, I don't know, cancer or AIDS or whatever it's going to be that's going to, you know, slowly kill them over time.
Yeah.
It's much better just to be told, these people already knew that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's like the job, the better writing way of doing this, like go to a workshop and the workshop instructor would be like, okay, this is actually a really great way to establish how much Ashby cares for his crew and how good of a doctor Dr. Chef is, that he's an alien and this is the third alien, but he already know he's so good at what he does that he already notices that. So have a scene where Ashby notices this and then he goes to the doctor, and then to have Dr. Chef talk to Ashby and say, yes, I already knew about that because I'm a doctor, it's my job to know about it, but I didn't want to talk to you about it because, you know, I want to spare. Like, there's so many opportunities for, in my head, better storytelling than the sentence Ashby and Dr. Chef were the only ones who knew that Ohan had begun to wane. And I'm like, my brain is going, there is like eight scenes that we could write here which reveal more about the situation, more about the world building, more about the crew, more about the dynamics of it, more about the alien biology and all that kind of stuff. But no, it's just, we're just told it, you know, and because we're just told it flatly, like, we then can bring what it's like to realize that somebody isn't looking very good, and you're like, oh yeah, and you follow along with them, and then you find out, you know, oh, they've had cancer this whole time or whatever it is, and then you're all upset. But the book doesn't take us on the journey, it just tells us this journey is happening.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's this weird thing. It's more comfortable and more appealing and more relaxing and more turn off your brain and more just sit back and relax, and this is happening here. There are stakes here, but we're not going to make you live those stakes.
Yes.
We're just gonna tell you that those stakes exist.
Exactly. And this is as I say, appealing.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm saying. There's a conflict.
Who really want that.
There's a conflict here between it being a great example of cozy science fiction and me going, that doesn't make sense. Let me just read you something here. Again, this is, again, it's not so much a criticism, because what the book is doing, the book isn't, I've lost, how do you bring up this thing? So,
I have no idea what you do.
So here's again. So listen to this. This is, again, this is taking someone out of the emotional stuff. It's just a different example. So they came out of a snap or something like that, or whatever they call it, a bridge, a wormhole-y kind of thing. She looked to the window. The view had changed. A red dwarf lay in the distance, surrounded by several planets. One was partially terraformed, with a small fleet of GC cargo carriers and transport ships clustered nearby. A new colony was being built. A sphere of blinking safety buoys hung in the space around the ship, their yellow lights directing others away from the wayfarer's work area. And I'm like, wait, you look out of a window? Again, this is something that I was reading. I was like, let me make a note about this. I was like, oh, Luke from 9 years ago made a note about this. But it's the idea of, like, you look out of a window of a spaceship and the view had changed. And you can, I don't know, see that there's a red dwarf with several planets or one of them. Like, it's not explained how she is seeing this out of the window. is it really a window? Is it a fake window? Is there a scanner? Is there, like, did she know all this already and is that just picking out points of light? Is there an overlay of the window, like, circling things with, like, a heads-up display kind of thing? Is there information? Because there's literally no way to know all of that by looking out of a window of a spaceship that there's many planets and some of them have been terraformed. Because there just isn't, like, that's a pure science fictional cartoon way of looking out, you know? Like, you see someone looking out of a spaceship window and all the planets are just lined up there really big in the sky, if you know what I mean. So yeah. Like, this is what this planet looked like, this is what another planet looked like, and everything is encompassed in this like 16x9 or letterbox thing, or like it's purely like televisual science fiction storytelling that you can look out of a window and know all of that things, the scale, what's happening on the scale of the solar system and what's happening at the space station that you're coming up to. It's literally impossible. And again, from someone who is reading a science fiction book thinking I'm getting science fiction, that is like the literally one of the worst science fictional passages that I've ever read to actually bring across what it is like in the solar system. But the book is just like, we're not caring about that. We just need to know that there's like three planets here, one of them's being terraformed, and the spaceship's coming up to a space station, which can always be accomplished within one establishing shot in a Star Wars movie, because they come in, the spaceship's always there, it goes whoosh, and then they land on the space station or on the ground and they get out and start walking. I'm like, that's the job that sentence was trying to do, or that description was trying to do. It was trying to link us from the spaceship's arrived, what's it like here, great, we don't need to worry about that, what's Kizzy wearing, you know? And in a movie or in a TV show, that's what establishing shots are doing. So what she did, so Becky Chambers is just describing what it's like to watch a scene of a television show with a scene change and they turn up in a new space, in a new solar system.
Yeah.
And that's great. It did the job perfectly, except it used the word, she looked out the window. If they had just said they arrived in this new solar system and this is what it was like, I'd be like, great. But the line, she looked out the window, casts all of that into something that should be visible to human eyes looking out of a window. And I'm just like, this is the worst ever. It's the worst thing ever. But the first time I read through, I was like forgiving of all of that. You know what I mean? It's like,
now I'm really struggling here. What's the bad thing about looking out of a window?
How can you? Okay. Do you know what space is like? If you look out of a window, can you see a red dwarf lay in the distance surrounded by several planets? Those things, several planets, just aren't visible to the naked human eye looking out of a window of a spaceship. That's just physically impossible. One was partially terraformed. You can't tell something is partially terraformed by spotting it out of a window and it's orbiting a red star. If there's more than one planet visible through a window, you can't tell if it's partially terraformed or not. That is physically, it's scientifically impossible to know from looking out of a starship window. It had a small fleet of GC cargo carriers and transport ships clustered nearby. How can you see a small fleet of cargo carriers and transport ships clustered nearby a planet where you can see several of the planet? Like, it's impossible. Like, if she had a telescope, if she had a scanner, if it was literally anything else that told me she was knowing this information or perceiving this information in any way except looking out of the window of a spaceship, it would make sense. But like I say, on the face of it, it doesn't make sense that somebody can look out of a window of a spaceship arriving in a solar system for the first time and picking up all of that. That would be hours and hours and hours. And this scene is done in science fiction books all the time. You arrive in a solar system and they're like, right, get out the scanners. And they track orbits of planets and they're like, oh, right, we're in this solar system. This is this. We know this about this. This book is not interested in this. That's what I'm saying. It just goes, oh, they're in this new solar system and this is what it's like. And what I'm saying is that what I want from science fiction is, when someone turns up in a new solar system, to have, I don't know, any curiosity about it, any wonder about it, anything at all, anything at all. But she looks out a window and we get a description. There is no wonder. There is no science fictional. There is no science. The science that's there doesn't make sense. Like, everything about the scene, like I say, is the worst example of what science fiction typically is trying to do.
Right.
And like I say, the book is so not interested in the typical way that science fiction would work, could work, should work outside of, like, you know, Firefly or Star Trek or whatever it is.
Yes.
You know.
And now here's a good connection to the previous book that you just mentioned, that the last book.
Solaris?
No, the romance book that you...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know which one. Ministry of Time.
I sorted... Ministry of Time.
Yes. Ministry of Time. You said it's a romance book.
Yeah.
And I think this is what these cozy science fiction are. They are not science fiction in the first place. They use science fiction for something else.
Yeah, yeah.
So it is just fiction in a certain time.
They're just using
place.
The tropes of science fiction.
And it's literally like, okay, this is a romance book that... where some bits are not like we have it right here on Earth.
Some speculative elements in a romance.
And I think that
unfortunately, if that had stayed a romance book, but it actually tried to be a timey-wimey conspiracy book as well. And I'm like, and also a Man Out of Time book. And I was like, oh no, it's just, why were there like gunfights
and
espionage at the end? I just wanted them to fuck and then, I don't know, escape to Alaska together.
Yes, and I think that is also what happens in The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet a little bit. It is doing a thing really well, and then it's trying too much and too suddenly like too things that don't really fit the.
No, I think it's doing the coziness really well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But like I just say, what would need to happen to make this book into a well-written book would destroy the coziness.
Yeah,
they're incompatible. The coziness is incompatible in this case.
Yes,
with. This, but again, I find, weirdly enough, I find lots of other books cozy because, again, I can also read them and turn my brain off.
Yes,
but they're not about, you know, found family and autistic
it's
people.
Different things that you're looking for to turn your brain off.
Yeah, I find like, oh, Peter F. Hamilton. There's spaceships and there's aliens and whatever, and I just read through the book and it's like fun characters doing fun things, and I'm like, I can read this 100%. Uncritically and turn my brain off, and that's why I find like a big PDF Hamilton tome I wouldn't say cozy but comforting, because I think cozy now has like connotation,
it's
like other connotations, if you know what I mean. So for me, a comfort read can be a fun space adventure or a space opera or alien invasion or something. For me, that's a comfort read, or rereading a culture book where I already know exactly what I'm going to expect. I don't like, it's not going to take me outside of any comfort zones or anything like that, but it's going to allow me to experience some fun things as well. So it's sort of like, I'm not knocking what people want out of cozy science fiction. I just wanted to explain why in this case, cozy science fiction is incompatible with good science fiction and writing, which would, in a standard way or like in an objective way, be called good. Mm. But if it's effective enough, the emotional impact of it, or the removal of negative emotional impact, and working much more in the like, there's tension. Actually, it doesn't matter because they're good enough at the job. Oh, what about this? They're going to be they're going to be friends all along. You know, all of that kind of stuff, which brings that comfort and brings that coziness. Yeah, it works. And again, this has got a high rating as well. But also, even if this is really. Even if this was really good, it would have to be, I think, just, I would have to be able to read it a second time for it to ever make it onto the SFBRP
Absolutely.
Must reads list.
And I totally agree. And as I said, I don't want to force this on there, because I don't think it suits the intention of the list.
Yeah. I would have been happy for it to be on there if you would have put up, if you really wanted it there and put up a, not even a good defense, just said that the emotions were strong enough. Like, it's one of those things that, like, if a book makes me cry, I'm like, ooh, is this the best book ever?
Yeah.
And then later on in the book, it falls apart. And I'm like, but this was a book that I wanted to make me cry. Yes, and it didn't it did make me cry at one point, but then it wasn't good. And I'm really disappointed when a book hits me emotionally in that way.
Yeah, it did do that 9 years ago.
Yeah.
But now reading it for the second time, I was just, there was just too many things that it tried to pile on top. If it would have been, a bit less ambitious or less trying, it would have probably made it on there. However, I think it is a bit used too much, and now I'm becoming a ChatGPT kind of person.
Like, cause you're looping back and repeating something.
Yeah. And then using words that are not used so much. On the must reads list, if there's a subsection appendix that says cozy science, like there is a thing where people use cozy fiction in science fiction settings,
yeah,
or in settings that are more science fictional,
yeah,
the books by Becky Chambers are definitely really, really strong representation of that.
Here's the thing. You said the best one is this monk and robot. Probably not versus.
No.
Alien versus president. Monk versus robot. No, another weird thing to say about this is that this book is, there's too much in it.
Yeah.
Because there isn't any single storyline which gets dramatic enough that isn't resolved within that chapter,
yes,
or within the next paragraph or within the next sentence in some cases. Or we're told that there has been drama, but we're just told that it's already happened and it's already resolved,
yes,
or whatever.
Yes.
That is actually also incompatible with novel length of fiction.
Yeah.
Like you say, the reason why there's so many characters and there's so much going on, and they visit these people here, then they go there, and then they meet these people, and there's a pirate's adventure, then there's a war, and then they meet these other aliens, and this is because it has to be episodic, because if you don't allow any drama to go on long enough and become impactful enough, it means nothing can actually last the length of a novel, which means that novella length fiction, or in this case, episodic fiction,
yeah,
is actually the correct length for cozy science fiction.
Yeah.
Because, and that's why, you know, murder bots can be like, all right, don't turn off your brain, don't think about it. I'm like, wee, a monster of the week, whatever. And
yes,
you just go for it.
Yes.
And that's why Murderbot worked for me in novella length. And then there's like, and now a novel. And I'm like, this is a slog and bad, and I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to carry on with this.
Yeah.
Because if I want something to be fun and unchallenging and cozy, novella length, yeah, let me listen to the whole audiobook in 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Don't make me sit through 15 hours of this,
yes,
or 10 hours of this. You know?
And I think the big part of what it is happening here is, as you said and mentioned many times, is the television episodical style.
Yeah.
And that is so influential in these books. Mm. And it is so much... yeah, that is, you couldn't have people write this way without them having experienced in their youth and childhood,
yeah,
the effect of
episodic
television,
yeah,
in long-running series.
Yeah.
Because this is literally what it does. It has one focus, one topic in the episode, but then you introduce longer running drama,
the B plots that can go
over
through it, yeah,
like you go back, you have five episodes, and then the sixth episode starts with like a flashback of,
yeah,
this previously happened,
yeah.
Do you remember that? Now we are continuing that storyline,
but also it can't change too much because,
yes,
people who haven't seen the previous episodes have to come in and go, well, I already know what all these people are, yeah, they're,
yes,
a couple, they're not a couple,
yes,
this is what it is. So it has to change slowly,
yes,
and any episode can't, you can't just sort of like kill off four main characters in an episode and,
yeah,
come back,
yeah,
and like, wait, where are my favorite characters?
Yeah,
you're like,
yeah, yeah,
oh, no, no.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything resets at the end
and
of every episode.
So they're like, what happens in these books is they are using TV series episodic rules,
yeah,
to write books.
Yeah.
This,
yeah,
is definitely what's,
it's the
happening.
Rules of, yeah, it's the rules of long-running episodic television,
yes,
as form, as structure to, yeah, to again, put their characters in situations which you know that at the end of them, the people in the red shirts might die, but the people,
yeah,
in the blue shirts,
yeah,
and,
exactly,
and the main, like our main characters, at the start of the next episode, everything's going to be reset.
Yeah.
Everyone's come out of the med bay and fine,
yeah,
which is literally what happens with Murderbot at the end of everyone, like, I'm down to 15% capacity, and,
yes,
sort of like, don't worry, the start of the next book you're going to be back at 100%,
yes,
and,
yes,
your body's going to be rebuilt, yeah, and you're going to be fine.
100%,
yeah,
what's happening here. And I think the people who read these books now,
yeah,
have grown up so much,
yeah,
in their childhood and youth with these TV series tropes,
yes,
that for them, that already,
yeah,
makes it relaxing and cozy,
yeah,
and they feel...
I didn't grow up with television,
yes,
tropes, you know.
Yes.
But also, this is a very video game kind of base as well. Here's this level. We're here.
Yes.
We wrap it up and we move on. You're like, but do I have to think? Nope, don't think about it.
Yeah,
everything,
yeah,
resets.
Yeah.
You hit the save space. You hit the save spawn, save point or whatever it is. And that's why for me, playing PUBG, which is like this runaround shooty kind of gun, should be the most stressful thing. That for me is the Luke turning off his brain and having mindless comforting thing. It's sort of like, yeah, it's a game about shooting and running around and stuff. It's like, yeah, and every time everybody starts with the same kind of thing. There is nothing to think about beforehand. There is no story before this game. There's no story after this game. It's just a battle royale. The circle closes. You do it. It's self-contained. And the next time you play, everything is back to normal again. Yes. Like, you don't need to worry about it. You know, it is so comforting to... And that's different from a lot of computer games where there is something long running. You're like, oh, I've got to do inventory management. If I make a wrong thing now and I use up this thing, this resource, later when I get to a bigger boss or I get to another thing or I'm up against another group, I won't have that resource or whatever. And that's a, you know, that challenging, like, extraction shooter, long running game, PvP or whatever it is. That's a kind of game that people get into when you're invested in it.
Yeah.
And you have your sword and you don't want your sword to break. Yeah. And then you're going to go up against this person, you're going to go in, then you got to build up your energy and do that, and you're spending all that time in the game. And I'm like, what I love about PUBG is that it's the opposite of all of that.
Yes.
Every single time I start the game, it's fresh and I never have to worry about it, and none of my actions have any consequences.
Exactly.
And I'm done.
That is the important point of this, is because your individual life, your life that you're living, isn't like that. You can't say, okay, I just spawn again and I try over again. Every single decision you make, and you have to be strategic about the money and what you do in life with the work and everything. That is then...
I just want to say, I work on cruise ships all the time.
Yes.
I'm around people who are working on ships all the time.
Yes.
And as someone who has a minor job on a cruise ship, I've got... I don't always have duties, but there's stuff going on. But I'm around crews on ships. The crew on the ship... Again, I might have mentioned this in my previous review 9 years ago.
You mean on the long end,
on the Wayfair or whatever it is.
Yes, the Wayfair.
The life that they have there is so insane to me, because it's the opposite of what it's actually like to live and work on a ship.
Might again, be
I'm talking
space,
about cruise ships,
space
which are like
or sea ships.
Oh yeah, I'm just sort of like, how can anyone nothing would work. Everybody, like, if that was a real spaceship, they would set off. Like, 2 days into it, everybody would die and you'd never hear from them again. The way that the command structure, there's no command structure, there's no insurance, there's no procedures, everything's like, oh yeah, I'm doing this thing with the air conditioning, or I'm putting in new air filters, oh, I'll do this one time, like, oh yeah, I'll get around to it. It's all like, if the air filters go wrong, like, on cruise ships, air filters, like, this massive part of, like, how, of course, there's thousands of people on them, but they're like, there's never a moment where everybody doesn't have way more work than they could possibly have. There is, I never meet anyone on a cruise ship who doesn't have more work that will fill up all of their time that's possible to work. And that's why they're all on rotas, that they have to have time off, you know, otherwise everyone will just end up working the whole time.
You don't finish your work.
Yeah, the whole life of being a crew member on a cruise ship is them not giving you too much work, because there's always more work to be done. Yeah. That's the whole thing is about it, you know, because there's
work
the regulation.
Never ends.
There's never, and the people on the ship, it feels like they're constantly looking for things to do and just relaxing and they're just hanging out and chatting.
And it's explained,
like,
they have these bots that do the menial
work. So what's
work?
The crew for? Like, it's the... Again, this is... I have no problem with this, because you have to... Like, on these TV shows, you have to have all the people. And you see everybody walking around in the background of all of these things. And that's the people that I work with on cruise ships. Again, I'm an entertainer. I'm not a background character. But, like, everybody else I work with is like a background character for the main stories that they're having, which is, again, in the cruise ship speak, people are having good holiday, having a nice vacation and a nice trip, and they're having the time of their life, or they're on their honeymoon or whatever like that. And in this, it's like... Every it's just they're on a luxury cruise. I'm like, oh yeah, we can take you. Yeah, here's your cabin. Was it like to be on a ship and to be a new hire on a ship and you to have your own cabin, that there's not four of you or six of you in the same cabin is insane. It's all anyway. So that's again a minor complaint, because in the TV shows you concentrate on the main characters and you see all the background characters, all the red shirts and all the lower decks people. Of course, now there's TV shows about the lower decks on the Star Trek.
Yeah.
So yeah, there is stuff going on down there, but here. They're just like, yeah, I guess we've got some bots that look after that, and nanotechnology something. Yeah. Lovey has got some routine that
the ship runs itself.
The ship, and I'm like, well, these people, like, what are we even doing here? It's crazy.
Yeah.
But, and again, in TV shows, you just always pick up, the TV show starts with somebody with a welder going, and then they kick the machine and it starts whirring and they're like, great, I did my job. And then they turn around and there's an alien invasion and we just move on with actually what the drama is.
Yeah.
But this book is about the times where nobody is working and the drama isn't happening. And I'm like, there is never a moment on any spacecraft or vessel or anything where there is no drama happening and also not everybody is working. And at one point, again, I looked at a previous note. I'm like, how is everyone on the ship asleep at the same time? Yeah. I'm like, this makes no sense
at all. Because they have this AI, the ship. They have the ship that runs itself.
But also, that's not how command structures work.
Absolutely.
And watchkeeping works. And I'm always like, but who's the watchkeeper at the moment? Yeah. There has to be like a human. Anyway, it's
the there's one more thing I want to say.
What
is what you said about the objective writing in a good book? What saying? What is the thing? What is the rule?
I know what I'm saying is cozy science.
No.
Oh, the show don't tell.
Show don't tell.
Which I don't agree with in all situations.
Right. And I think TV series take this to the extreme.
Yeah.
Because in a TV show, you don't have people in a room with each other, talking to each other, explaining things or whatever.
Yeah.
You just have a shot.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
And that is, you can't do that with writing. Like,
yes, but no, the show don't tell is slightly more, it's slightly more nuanced than that.
Right.
The show don't tell is that note that I read, this person were the only ones to notice that this person had done. There's no way to do that in a TV show without it being shown, without two people having a conversation about it.
Yes.
You could do it, but then it's really subtle.
Yes.
You actually have to have like these interactions, and it can be done in TV and movie.
And the more you repeat it, the more unsubtle it's going to be.
Where two people will look at somebody and notice that that person's ill. But the only way to do it in TV is to show someone like literally like getting up and going, oh, and you see someone breathing heavily like, they've got cancer, they're dead before
the
end of the episode.
And then, no. What you're going to show in TV series is you can then show two people looking at each other knowingly, like, or like really like
raising their eyebrows at each other. Yeah. So that's what I'm saying is that.
Yeah.
But in terms of fiction writing, the show don't tell is the narrator, the author of the book, tells us that there is somebody is going to be dead before, or there's someone who's got the life-threatening, well, not even illness, it's just part of the life cycle.
Yes,
or whatever
it is.
This person's life cycle is ongoing, and these two people have noticed that it's coming up before the end of the novel.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the difference between showing and telling. Like, it's like the subtlety of it is like, is this an opportunity for characters to reveal something about themselves or for the characters to discover something about the world around them.
Yeah.
And the worst bit about them arriving in a new solar system wasn't the description of what the solar system was like, is that Becky Chambers decided to try a bit of show don't tell.
Yeah.
And she said someone looked out of a window and she saw. That would have been okay if they arrived in the solar system. This is what the solar system was like. That is literally telling and not showing.
Yes.
So in this case, the show don't tell is like, oh, what I'm going to do is I'm going to show her looking out the window, and that will frame the establishing shot is. And I'm like, the establishing shot is always from a wide view outside of the spaceship, not from one person inside the spaceship. Because if you see stuff from the point of view, there is actually a movie that does this, which is Pitch Black with Vin Diesel. Or whatever.
Okay.
And at the start, they do an establishing shot of how they get down to the planet, but you never see it from outside. It's all in close-up shots, and this spaceship crashes on the planet in this big desert.
Yeah.
And for budgetary reasons, they couldn't film this crashing. They tried it. Like, they're like, yeah, we put this spaceship and it just looks shit. So everything is done from the point of view of the people inside. So they come down, it's all like shaky cam, like there's loads of stuff coming over, and then it all calms down. And then they get out and there's this big trail of like
They show the aftermath.
They show the aftermath of it. And you're like, oh, that was amazing by not showing the establishing shot or not showing the action of how we got there, just by showing it from inside the cabin. It was actually more effective. So that's the kind of like the difference between showing and don't telling. Just concentrate on the eyes of our characters as the spaceship crashes.
Right.
It tells the story of the spaceship crashing and reveals their character. That some people are panicking. Yeah. Some Vin Diesel's just looking cool. Yeah. You know, so you know, people are just like, you know, dealing with it. How the characters deal with the spaceship crash in different ways is better than showing the wide angle view or the zoomed out view of the spaceship crashing.
Yes.
So yeah, there's the difference in skill and craft between movie making or TV making and writing.
Yes.
In that case. Cool. It's like a different skill.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and it feels like that in this kind of book, there's a bleed over.
Yeah, yeah. It's using, like I say, the language and tropes of televisual science fiction storytelling to not even have to tell you about stuff. Yeah. It just sort of like, yeah, imagine there's like lots of characters and some of them are aliens. You got that picture in your head? You've all seen Star Trek or Star Wars or these other ones.
And we're good.
Just like that. which again, it's fine in this book. In other books, it's more infuriating.
Yes.
All right, let's wrap it up there. We've gone about an hour and 10 minutes. I always want to do like under an hour, and it was less than an hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah.
This book is not going on. But I've really enjoyed this discussion about really diving into what makes a book work emotionally.
Yeah.
What cozy science fiction can achieve.
Yes.
And that how it's like incompatible from what you'd say is like traditional objective good science fiction or good writing, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I wouldn't say completely incompatible because I think it can work, but this book didn't like it can't achieve both.
And we also established that the better writing format for this is novellas.
Yeah, yeah. If this book had been like, again, I gave up 40% of the way through.
Yeah,
I'm just like, no.
Multiple books of
because I've got 40% in the way, and I'm like, I remember there's more stuff happening up until this point. Yes. We've had like one alien sex scene, and that's the only thing that's happened so far.
Yeah,
like, give me more of. Well, don't give me more alien sex scenes, but like, give me more situations where somebody is like, oh, I'm worried if other people will find out about this. Someone's got a secret. I'm like, wow, two people have got a secret from each other.
It's meaningless in this.
Yeah, part. Yeah. And then they're like, and next chapter, I'm like, oh, I thought somebody was going to find out about their secret and there was going to be drama. No, nobody found out about it. No drama. Yeah. And then it's like, and next chapter, and Kizzy's upset about something. I'm like, nope.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Let's wrap it up there. Cool. You can follow us on Instagram and Blue Sky, I think. Mastodon. Maybe.
And yeah, Goodreads.
But, yeah, Goodreads as well. Yeah, yeah, let's check out other people. So what am I looking for?
Especially see if somebody other people recently have reviewed it or...
Yeah, yeah, that's the thing as well. Time? That's the other thing is like, will this be relevant? I don't think this book is going to be relevant outside of the people who read it in 2016. Because like you say, already you start reading and go, the politics in here are a bit... off. Again, I'm not saying they are a bit off. I'm saying that when the politics of something, when the coziness of a book relies on the politics of everything just being, oh, this is all great, everyone gets along, there's no such thing as racism, everyone's having sex with the people, autistic people are people too, they have valid emotional states, but we just can't communicate with them, you know, all this kind of stuff. And then those are the books, like I say, that you read from the 1970s where they're like, everybody is free love and sexism doesn't exist and the racism isn't this. And then you read it now and you're like, uh-oh. I'm thinking this book, again, all the politics seem fine now, but you know, it's one of those books where you're like, in 15 years time, it's so close to the edge of
you
politics
of what,
everything A-OK right on politics that you're like, well, that's going to be cringy. Mario gives it 5 stars. Jenny from Reading Envy gave it 5 stars. Firefly meets Ursula K. Le Guin meets Star Trek. Can't see the Ursula K. Le Guin in there very much, having recently read more Ursula K. Le Guin. Lindsay rates it 5 stars. H. Soltoff Flaskig, good name, 5 stars. Tudor, Andrew, Barry. Barry gives it 4 stars. Yeah, lots of 4 stars. More reviews from people I follow. Oh, look at this. Loads like of people.
Look, all from 2020.
Yeah, they're all from 2016, 2016 2017. 17. I haven't seen... Oh, 2019 still gave it 5 stars. I'm looking for... I guess if we keep going down... Oh, more people. Wow, loads of people. Everyone, it's like there's a few 3 stars, but everybody else is like 4 or 5 stars. Here's the thing. When I first read it, I'd have given it... I mean, I can't remember my review, but maybe I should go now listen back to this episode.
Yeah, gave it 3 stars. It says like, we together, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's my review? Oh, it just says full review on my podcast. So, but I gave it 3. There's a 3-star rating there.
Yeah.
So it's probably for me, it was a 2.5-star book, but I bumped it up to 3 stars because I got to the end of it and I mostly enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I'm going to wind back that review.
Okay.
A bit.
Right.
again, I didn't even finish it this time out.
Yeah.
Mostly because I'd read it before. So I'm, it's not like a knock against the book in that way, because again, I started listening to the audiobook of Ender's Game again, and I just had some disagreement with the one reading, or the way that the audiobook narrator started reading one of the characters. I'm like, nope, he's reading that wrong, and I stopped reading, listening to the audiobook. So yeah. Again, I'm not blaming it for that, but I'd probably round up my review down to like 2 stars.
Right. I think I don't remember what I gave it in the previous review, to be honest. And I don't know if I have marked it down on my Goodreads either. But I think I would give it now 3.5 to 4. Maybe 3.5.
Well, last time we averaged it out to 2.5 stars. So we could just leave it as 2.5 stars.
Yeah.
You know, it can just have the same rating as last time. I think that's
right.
Fine.
Okay.
Is that all right?
Yeah.
I think it's
like, maybe for me it would then go to a 3-star book, which is then representative.
Yeah, but if I give it 2 stars and you're giving it 3 stars.
Yeah, but I gave it 3.5, I said.
Oh, now you're giving it 3.5.
Yes, I give it.
I don't want to give it 2.75. We can let's just leave it 2.5, because that's what it was last time.
Right.
And again, the book hasn't changed.
Yes.
My reading, and I think it's not going to increase. Neither of our ratings are going to increase this time.
This episode is also not about reviewing the book for rating reasons.
A general audience.
This was a reread to see if it goes on the must read list.
Yeah.
And I don't think it should be on there, but it should be mentioning. It
yeah,
should
yeah,
be mentioned
the
somewhere in
yeah.
the.
It's like the canonical version of what cozy science fiction is.
Yeah.
Which in it, like I say, in its own right, that's why I wanted to come back to this, because I wanted the cozy science fiction movement to be represented on this
yes,
list in some way.
Exactly.
In the same way that, you know, space opera is, and
yeah.
books about game design
yeah.
is, and religious organizations or religious groups on another planet. You know, all of these different kind of things have representation on the list. And I thought this might go on there. But also, all those other books are better than this book in like every single way,
yes.
you know?
Yes.
And so it's difficult to put a book which which is influential and a great example of what it is,
yeah.
but also not very well written. It's difficult to put that on the list. So let's wrap it up there.
Yeah.
Should we give it a go? Should we say goodbye?
That's it, yes.
Do we remember how to sign off from this?
I don't.
All right, that's it from us. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.